Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for June 19th, 2012. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Holly Ingram and Ray Blind about new work that identifies a mechanism for regulating the activity of the nuclear receptor SF1. SF1, or steroidogenic factor 1, is a nuclear receptor that activates the expression of genes that are required for sexual development and reproduction. As a nuclear receptor, its transcriptional regulatory activity is modulated by the ligands that it binds, and one of the ligands it binds is a lipid called phosphatidyl inositol bisphosphate, or PIP2 for short. Ingram and Blind have identified an unusual mechanism by which the PIP2 that's bound to SF1 is modified to regulate SF1's transcriptional activity. Ingram and Blind spoke to me by telephone from the Department of Cellular and Molecular Pharmacology at the University of California, San Francisco. Welcome, Dr. Ingram, Dr. Blind.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Most PIP2 that's present in a cell is found at the plasma membrane. How does this membrane pool of PIP2 participate in signaling pathways?
This has been well studied by many labs over many years, and there are two general ways that it participates in signaling. First, PIP2, of course, is a phospholipid with the lipid tail buried in the membrane and the head group exposed, and phospholipases can come and cleave off that head group to generate soluble inositol phosphates that can then work downstream to elicit signaling events. And in the second way, which has also been very well studied, PIP2, bound to a membrane, gets phosphorylated by PI3 kinases. And after that modification, you recruit cytosolic proteins that then generate downstream signaling events. And so those are the two major ways that PIP2 is involved in cellular signaling.
But there's another pool of PIP2 that's found in the cell, and that's in the nucleus. What is that PIP2 in the nucleus doing?
Well, that actually is a great question and one that we really tried to address in our paper. And so it turns out that for decades, others have suspected that there is a pool of PIP2 in the nucleus that does not appear to be bound by lipid membranes. So this is quite surprising. So about 40% of the nuclear PIP2 is actually not associated with membranes. It's been found that that PIP2 pool has been perhaps localized to nuclear speckles. And so a handful of labs showed that there's some nuclear proteins that can actually bind PIP2. And this is exactly how we got involved in this study, because our protein binds PIP2.
That nuclear protein that binds PIP2 that you're studying is SF1, a nuclear receptor, steroidogenic factor 1. But PIP2 binds to SF1 in an unusual way. How does PIP2 bind to SF1?
Well, it binds to SF1 in an almost similar way that you could think about it binding to a plasma membrane. And that is, with all phospholipids, of course, you have these lipid chains that are hydrophobic, and you have these head groups which are hydrophilic. And so in SF1, those lipid chains are buried deep within what we call the ligand binding pocket, and that leaves this hydrophilic or solvent-loving head group exposed. And based on our crystal structure that we carried out in 2005, and some modeling, we suggested that, in fact, that head group would be perfectly positioned and perhaps could be modified by either lipid kinases or by lipid phosphatases. And that's exactly what we actually asked in this paper, is can that really happen based on how this phospholipid is positioned in the SF1 protein?
And so, Ray, you did the work to investigate this possibility, and what did you find? Is that head group of PIP2 modified?
That's exactly what we found, and that's what nobody had actually known could happen before, because there is all of this PIP2 that's in the nucleus that isn't in a membrane. So the most logical place that people would actually expect to find that PIP2 is maybe associated with proteins. And so the SF1 protein, which is a transcription factor, we knew it binds to PIP2, So we just simply asked if that complex of PIP2 bound to the protein could be phosphorylated by the kinase that we studied. And that's exactly what we found. And that's obviously very interesting in and of itself, but what was even more interesting was that we found that other kinases, actually much more well-studied kinases that act very robustly on PIP2 when it's in a membrane, are completely inactive when you put the PIP2 phospholipid in the context of the SF1 protein. So that's one of the really major findings of the paper, is that this PIP2 in the nucleus can actually be changed differently once you put it in the context of a protein versus the way it's been classically studied in the context of a membrane.
And so what does that chemical modification of PIP2 do to SF1's ability to regulate the transcription of target genes?
Well, that's what we don't really know. It's possible that it could structurally change the actual shape of SF1. But what we do know for sure happens is that SF1's ability to bind target genes actually in the DNA changes when it's bound to PIP2 versus when it's bound to PIP3. So when it's bound to PIP2, it's not associated with the DNA. And when it's bound to PIP3, it is bound to the DNA, and it can activate those genes. So that's an active area that we want to investigate further, what actually happens to SF1 when it's bound to PIP2 versus PIP3.
So we know that the activity of receptors can be differentially regulated depending upon the ligand that they bind.
Right.
So they can have their activity regulated in one way when they're bound by a certain ligand, or their activity can be regulated in a different way when they're bound to a different ligand or a ligand with a chemical modification. But it seems really unusual to me that the ligand would be chemically modified while it's bound to the receptor.
Right.
I can't think of any other examples where that happens. Do you know of any other examples where the ligand is modified while it's bound to the receptor?
No, we don't, which is part of the reason why this is such a neat, exciting story. Because there are examples of other proteins that bind to ligands where obviously the ligand is changed chemically inside the cell before it actually binds to its receptor. However, no one's really thought of this concept that perhaps the ligand and the receptor are almost, I don't want to say statically, but almost more together more often than they are apart, and that the ligand can actually be chemically modified directly while it's complex to the receptor. So that's really a new concept in the field that we work in, and hopefully we can find some other examples of it actually happening.
I would have thought it was unusual until we actually did this work, because I've been working in the nuclear receptor field a long time, and I really can't think of any other example of this. And actually, I would have to say that for this class of nuclear receptor, and there are other classes as well, the idea that they would bind phospholipids and phospholipids could be ligands was really something that wasn't instantly accepted in the field. And because of that, you know, when you think about it, you have a wonderful situation. You have a fairly static lipid tail sitting in that hydrophobic pocket with this head group that can be modified. And it could be also that, you know, it's not just PIP2 or PIP3, but there's other phospholipids with different head groups that can be modified by other lipid enzymes that also regulate receptor activity, similar to what we've found. So I think there's a lot of possibilities out there with these phospholipids as ligands that can then be transformed by these phosphatases and kinases that exist in the nucleus. And I really hope that others find this as well. I mean, it's a very exciting finding and does open up a lot of possibilities in terms of how a lipid code is generated in the nucleus to affect nuclear events.
So phospholipids have that hydrophilic head group and the hydrophobic tail, and that hydrophobic tail is normally buried in the membrane. When PIP2 is bound to SF1, that hydrophobic tail is in the ligand binding pocket of the protein. Could the binding of PIP2 to SF1 be sort of a way to make signaling more efficient, so that the lipid is already bound to the receptor, and then the signal comes through and modifies the head group to activate the pathway to activate signaling?
That's a very interesting idea, that perhaps rather than, if you think about something like the estrogen receptor, estrogen goes in and presumably comes out, and there's this exchange that goes on all the time in terms of regulating receptor activity. Now, in our case with SF1 and other nuclear receptors that combine phospholipids, perhaps these lipids sit in there and really aren't doing very much of anything until you have modification of the head groups. I mean, we're speculating that that modification of the head group is then acting to recruit additional proteins so that you change transcriptional activity. And it's pretty interesting because just actually in the last year, others have shown that these soluble head groups can bridge nuclear regulatory proteins that modify transcription. And so these head groups have a way of recruiting proteins. And so we would say, in just the same way that these soluble head groups recruit protein to affect transcription, the soluble head group sticking out of SF1, we could easily envision it recruiting other transcriptional components to then affect gene expression. And that's really our general hypothesis right now. That's the hypothesis we favor right now.
Dr. Ingram, Dr. Blind, thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for having us. We appreciate it.
That was Holly Ingram and Ray Blind, authors of a paper published in the current issue of Science Signaling. That paper by Blind and colleagues is titled Direct Modification and Activation of a Nuclear Receptor PIP2 Complex by the Inositol Lipid Kinase IPMK. And that wraps up the Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.